Welcome back for module number 3. We're really going to be jumping into some fantastic information today. So I'm really excited that you're back. In module number 2, we learned how by living from without as opposed to within, we enter into an endless cycle of buying people's approval and the world's approval. We turn into perpetual seekers. We also internalized how by spending our time gaining their approval, we compromise who we are so we can be who others want us to be. We learn to hide. While our entire purpose for hiding is to feel more worthy and gain acceptance from others, what we're actually doing when we hide is make it impossible to get closer to others. Why? Because our true self is not being shared. I hope that through last week's exercise, you have begun to see how when we hide, we become more distant from others. It has been said that knowing the problem is half the solution. That would mean that we are already halfway there. We are now going to start working on the proactive solution to this issue, the issue of our hiding and seeking worthiness from without. There is one simple point that we must observe. In all of the unhealthy behavior that we've discussed until now, who is it that we are concerned about in all of our interactions? The answer is ourselves. Again, like the person drowning, they will literally drown their rescuer to save themselves. In their desperation, they can only think about one person, themselves. This provides us with the very first thing we must do to fix this problem. And that is to begin training ourselves to stop making ourselves the main concern of everything in our life. It's actually a self-perpetuating cycle. The less we focus on ourselves, the less desperate we feel. The less desperate, in other words, the less desperate we feel for worthiness. The less desperate we feel for worthiness, the easier it is not to focus on ourselves. I want to clarify what focusing on ourselves and others means, as this can be easily confused, and very often it is. Of course, we must focus on taking care of ourselves. We must eat and sleep and make sure people aren't hurting us. I am talking about our interactions with others. When we are defensive, we are so consumed with what this all says about me. When we learn to focus on the other, when we're interacting with another person, we actually have the clarity to ask what this all says about them. This gives us the power to address their fears and concerns, which always strengthens the relationship. Imagine the power you have when someone hysterically accuses you of something. And instead of typically getting defensive, you simply focus on helping them. What we also discover, and what we always discover when we focus on the other's needs and concerns, is a viewpoint that offers more perspective. I cannot tell you how many times I was sure my wife was absolutely wrong or choosing an ineffective way to do something, only to learn how good it was that I listened to her. These repeated experiences with her and with others have humbled me to always try and listen to the other person, no matter how convinced I am that I know better. Let's do a fun and shocking exercise. Below this video, you should see a link to a document which I'd like you to print out. On this document, you're going to find a picture of two tables. This is actually referred to as Shepherd's Rotated Tables. This exercise is extremely important. And if we can keep it at the forefront of our minds, it can be life transforming and can have an enormously positive impact on our well-being. Once you have the sheet printed out, Look at both tables. Okay, so pause this video, print out the sheet, come back, and let's continue. Okay, so look at both tables. Which table looks longer to you? I am emphasizing looks. Okay, which table looks longer to you? Write down either right or left, if it's the right table or the left table, depending on which table appears to be longer to you. If the table on the left appears to be longer, write down left. If the table on the right appears to be longer, write down right. Okay. Now take a tissue. And we'll pause again. Go run to the bathroom or wherever you have a box of tissues, grab a tissue. And okay, now that you have this tissue, lay it over the longer table, the longer appearing table, and draw an outline of the top of the table. That means you should be drawing a rectangle, a rectangular shape. So you'll end up drawing all four sides of the top rectangular shape of the table on your tissue. Now, take that tissue and lay it over the top of the shorter table. I hope you are now as amazed as I was when I first did this. I want to explain to you why I was so amazed. And remain so amazed. And the valuable lesson I learned from this. From the moment I was asked the question as to which table looks longer, I suspected that both tables were the same size. However, my eyes refused to be able to see that. So then I drew the outline of the longer appearing table and placed it over the shorter appearing table. And lo and behold, it had proven to me that they are in fact the exact same dimensions. And I would assume you had the exact same shocking surprise. But here's what, here's what remains so shocking to me. That whenever I look at these two tables, the table to the left always looks longer to me. Even though the truth has been demonstrated, my eyes still cannot see the truth. This, of course, made me question how I determine what reality is. I now have conclusive evidence that what I see is not necessarily the way things are. This lesson is so vitally important because often we are absolutely sure about something, just as our eyes are absolutely sure that the tables are not the same dimensions. And we need to learn from this to develop a little bit of humility and understand that we cannot ever look at anything with pure objectivity. We are inherently biased by our own selves. And as convinced as we are about something, we must always second guess ourselves and ask that perhaps it is different than what we think it is. So let's talk about this idea of perception versus reality. Where does this bias come from? Well, first I want to share a story with you about a great Jewish mystic and a spiritual master. His name was Zusha, Z-U-S-H-E. I won't test you on the pronunciation. Now, his disciples once came to visit him. And when they were coming, approaching his house, they looked through his window and they saw him pacing about his house, distraughtly saying again and again, "Where is Zusha? Where is Zusha?" His disciples thought he may have lost his mind. When they found an opportunity, the disciples asked him, "What did you mean when you were walking frantically back and forth and saying, 'Where is Zusha?' Why would a person say to himself, 'Where am I? Where am I?'" And the master responded, "One day I am going to die. You will walk in and you'll find my body here on the floor. I will be exactly as I am right now, the same flesh, the same bones, the same countenance. And yet you'll be crying, 'Holy Master, why did you leave us? Why did you leave us? Holy Master, where did you go?' But I will not have gone anywhere. I will be right here before you. However, you understand that I, Zusha, am not a body. My true self is my spirit, my soul. It will be the true me that you will be crying for." After thinking about this, I considered, the master said, Zusha said, Now must be the time for me to discover the real me. Not when my soul has already left my body. This is why I was saying, where is Zusha? I have begun looking for my soul, for my spirit, for the real me. Understanding this story helps us see why we have a worthiness issue. It comes from the way we identify ourselves. It comes from the fact that we are made up of matter and spirit, and a body and the soul. The body is born and the body dies. The soul is an eternal existence. It pre-exists us and it outlives the body because it is eternal. Our body, being temporary and not eternal, is the part of us that is constantly seeking affirmation to know that it is worthy. Why? Because it knows it is only temporary. And how valuable can something temporary be? Our soul, being eternal, knows its inherent worth. And therefore, it doesn't have a complex or an issue with worthiness. Well, you may have also figured out that our body is our external self, our outside. Our soul is our internal self, our within. The body, in its desperation for worthiness, has a bias to every interaction it experiences. Its bias is to bring itself worthiness. This is what many people simply call selfishness. Everything revolves around ourselves because we are so desperate. And this is the reason why we look at things, hear things and experience things differently from the way they are, because our body never seeks to know what the truth is. It only seeks to know how this will affect me. Will this demonstrate to me my worthiness or not? And if it will not demonstrate my worthiness, I'm terrified of it. This is the reason why two people can hear someone say the very same thing and walk out saying they heard very different things. We process what we heard through our filter, and what comes out the other side is our version of reality. This is not reality at all. The soul has no agenda. The soul, unlike the body, has no agenda, being that it is inherently secure with its own worthiness and can therefore experience reality for exactly what it is without putting any spin on it. It's not intimidated by anything that reality is going to be saying. To sum it up, the body never sees reality clearly, and the soul always has a clear vision of reality. So let's look at this very simple example, okay? A couple, we're going to really ground this. This may have sounded a little bit abstract. I'm going to ground it very concretely so you'll understand this very clearly. A couple is cleaning up after dinner. The husband is washing the dishes and the wife is drying them. After the husband washes a particular dish and hands it to his wife, she comments, "Honey, this dish is still dirty." The husband responds back, "If you don't like the way I wash the dishes, you can wash them yourself." Oh, well, you may have had similar interactions with people who are near and dear to you. Let's analyze what happened here. The wife expressed a simple observation, an objective observation, that the dish is still dirty. Anyone that looks at this dish will see that it's dirty. When the husband responded, he simply could have said, "Oh, let me rewash the dish, it's dirty." The reason why he did not respond that way was because he was not responding to the objective reality. He was responding to his biased interpretation of the meaning he attached to his wife's words. Most likely, the interpretation was that she thinks that I don't know how to wash dishes. He didn't even hear about the dish being dirty as an objective statement. He decided that his wife was giving him a deeper message, that he doesn't know how to wash dishes, a form of him feeling devalued or unworthy. So what does he do? He responds to that interpretation of reality by defending himself. She has no idea what he's talking about, because that wasn't what she meant. He is almost living a delusional life, at least at this moment. This all comes from the bias of our body, the insecurity we have about our worthiness, which trickles down into the way we respond to everyday occurrences. So what happened was, this guy, instead of responding to the dirty dish, got caught up in what this might be saying about me, that I don't know how to wash dishes and my wife doesn't value me. And he's so desperate for his worthiness that his response is all about his worthiness and nothing to do with reality, which to anyone outside of himself sounds completely delusional and out of touch. And that's what happens when we live in desperation. And that is, going back to the spiritual element, the difference between living from a body orientation versus a soul orientation. Or you can just simply say someone who doesn't get their worthiness from within, but gets it from without, and in their desperation has this overreaction.